This is BBC WM on tour shortly, coming to Birmingham and Wolverhampton during the spring. There'll be a solid Silver 60 show, which I know many of you enjoyed a show similar to that in the past. I'm delighted to say that taking part in the show this year is John Walker of the Walker Brothers, who joins us now. John, great to have you with us, and we're looking forward to seeing you on stage in this area again very soon.
Yes, I'm actually looking forward to being there. It's going to be this tour is going to be a great deal of fun.
When were you last on tour in Britain?
2004, and I think in Birmingham, I think we played the Symphony Hall.
And it's part of, as I say, the big 60 show. So there's quite a few acts that people will remember on tour with you, I believe.
Yeah, it's the Mersey Beats, the Searchers, Wayne Fontana, the Dakotas, and myself.
Well, it's a terrific lineup, and I'm sure people will be getting there to see it, because the nostalgia shows are still very popular, and they sell out all over the place, don't they?
Yeah, they do a lot of work. Another good friend of mine, Dave D, he does quite a bit, you know, traveling around with quite a few of the other people, the Trogs, and everybody seems to be coming, popping up from everywhere.
Well, that's it. Well, there's still so many of your fans around who want to get out there and see you, which I imagine must be very exciting for you.
Well, it is. You know, it's a little different now. I mean, because we're all a little bit more mature, so.
Is that a good thing or not?
Well, yeah, to a degree. You know, we still have a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of good fun. But one of the things that I always kind of look forward to is, like during the break or something, I managed to get out and say hello to as many people as I can, which was something I couldn't do in the 60s.
I mean,
it was just total madness. And of course, now that it's a little more restrained, you know, we can sit and have a chat and, you know, sign some autographs and do some things. And it's quite fun.
Let me just give people an early note, and I'll remind them a bit later on this interview that you're going to be at the Alexandra Theatre here in Birmingham on March the 27th, and at the Wolverhampton Grand on the 22nd of April, which I think is towards the end of the tour, but I'll remind people of that again in a moment. John, just take us back. I can't believe, so it's 4 decades to the early 1960s when you were heading over to this country for the first time. That must have been a tremendously exciting experience for three guys from the States.
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, you always think about. I think the only place I'd been outside of California, outside the continental United States, was I went to Hawaii for a while, and that was the extent of my world traveling. And of course, coming, when we came to England, and I remember the plane coming in, and looking down, saying to myself, "Boy, it sure is gray down there," because it was February, and it had snowed. And it was like, I was thinking, my God, this is like, what a trip this is. And it was so different. I mean, obviously, I couldn't quite understand what people were saying at first, because I wasn't used to the accent, and everything was completely different. The cars were on the wrong side of the road. And, and the other thing, too, which is one of the big things, particularly in California, pedestrians always have the right of way. You know, they'll step out in the street in front of you when you're driving, it's like, and if you hit them, it's your fault.
Right.
And of course, in England or the UK period, that isn't the case. You get out in the street and it's no man's land. So we had to learn a few things really quickly.
I can imagine. Take us back to the start of the Walker Brothers. I mean, because what stage did you get together? Because for anybody who hasn't tweeted or didn't know, you weren't brothers.
Yeah, well, now, the thing was, at the time that we actually started performing as the Walker Brothers, just prior to that, I was working at a band with my sister and Tiny Schneider and another fellow playing bass, and we were playing, and Scott was in a surf band, and he left his surf band and joined my band. And then eventually that kind of sort of became the Walker Brothers in the end, because we started working as a trio, Scott, myself, and Tiny Schneider. And when we were playing in Gazzari's, and let me just tell you quickly where the name Walker came from. My last name is pronounced Moss. It's not spelled that way. It's spelled, M-A-U-S, which is a little different. And through my whole life, that my last name was mispronounced. So eventually, when I started playing music and started doing a lot of work, I just changed it to, I started using the name Walker. And when we wanted to call who we were something, nobody could think of anything. And so it actually was called the Walker Brothers Trio. And then the record company shortened it to Walker Brothers, period. And that's how that all came about.
So there were the three of you, Scott, Gary, and yourself in the end, yeah?
Well, no, it was in the end. It was Scott, Tiny, and myself.
Right.
Then Gary came into Gazzari's one night when we were playing in there. And he'd been over here working with BJ Proby. And he, you know, we'd known Gary for years. And he said, you know, you guys need to go to England and, you know, let's all go over there and it'll be great fun and this, that, and the other. And because we were a rock and roll band. We played rock and roll and blues and all kinds of stuff. And he said, you know, you're going to fit right in with the scene in England and it should all be happening. Well, of course, before we left, we were recording and we recorded Love Her, which was a huge ballad. Nothing to do with the beat scene, right? And needless to say, when we came over, we saw everything that was going on, and we didn't really come over to try to be successful in England. We just came over. And of course, then when Love Her was released here, the company here, Philips, they said, you know, we think we have a chance to put this record. And do you guys want to stick around while we see what we can do? And, you know, we have nothing to lose. Why not? So we did. And then, of course, Love Her was a hit, and everything happened from there.
You were 21 when the three of you took the plunge to come over, which, I mean, was that a big decision for you to make? Or because, I mean, obviously, putting it in the context of the time, what, 1965 was it you came here?
It was 65.
Yeah.
We actually didn't, I mean, from my point of view and pretty much from Scott's point of view, I mean, he was in school in America and we were playing, he was playing the clubs at night. And to me, I didn't actually think anything was really going to happen. So I didn't plan anything because we sort of had quite a lot going on in the United States. We were actually signed to be playing in this club for another year. So we sort of had to talk to the club owner there and you know, to let him let us leave that contract. You know, so I didn't think we'd be gone that long, but I guess I was wrong.
Was it fun coming and touring and getting involved in that wonderfully exciting scene at the time?
I think that period of time, anybody who missed that really missed something. You know, because I don't, a lot of people say, you know, there was a lot of excitement going on in the 70s and 80s, but I don't think there was as much excitement. Not like in the 60s. Because, I mean, everybody, the thing that really always sticks out in my mind when I think about that period of time, every single person in England knew what was going on with the music business. I mean, you could ask the flower lady, you know, who's got the number one record, she'd give you the top 10 and her opinions of everything and every group. You know, and it was like everybody, the guy that delivered milk knew what was going on. It seemed like the whole country was all involved in the music business.
So you've been here only, you know, a very short period of time, and suddenly you were number one, and you were the guy that, as you say, or you, the three of you, the ones that everybody was talking about, the whole country was talking about.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you know, what do you do with that? It was like, that was just totally phenomenal. It's kind of like, I mean, okay, when Love Her came out and it got in the charts, that was one thing. But when Make It Easy came out and it actually went to number one, that was kind of like, my God, we have a number one record. It's something that you, I mean, it's a thing that you strive for in your whole, you know, if you're playing music and making records, but you don't honestly believe it's going to happen. You just kind of do it. But then when you get some more hits, you know, then it goes really nuts.
Sure. John Walker is with us on BBC WM. We'll talk some more to John after the travel news. This is BBC WM. It's Mike Taylor with you in conversation with John Walker of the Walker Brothers, who had a string of hits in the 60s and 70s. As we've been saying, John will be back on tour in this area in the spring. And John, a few moments ago, we were talking about how within a few months of arriving in the UK in 1965, you were number one with Make It Easy on Yourself. Did that new star status change you or the way that you made your records?
Well, it didn't change the way we approached making records, but what it did do was allow us to continue making records that way. Because, you know, we were very expensive to record. Simply because we had such great big orchestras. And the thing was that we worked hard enough before we went in the studio so that we didn't really waste any time. We actually got down to business when we were in there. As far as that went, we were able to continue. And then touring, well, you know, you get spoiled a bit. You've got a couple of roadies and people looking after you and things like that. So, I mean, that you don't have to carry your own gear in, you know.
Yeah.
So that makes a difference.
for all the good stuff, did you feel, once you'd really hit stardom, and as you say, everybody knows your name, did you feel pressured by that?
Well, yes, in a way, because you keep striving. You think, you know, okay, I've done this, and it's as good as I can be today, and then you're kind of hoping that tomorrow you can be better. And then you try to work hard at being better. There was a lot of pandemonium when you, one of the things that was difficult was doing live shows, because you didn't have the kind of sound systems that you have today. You know, basically whatever the theater had in it is what you used. There was no monitors on the stage. You wouldn't have heard anything anyway, because the roar from the audience was louder than the band. That kind of stuff was difficult, because you never really knew if you were actually giving a good performance or not. You know, I mean, you couldn't really tell that, because you couldn't hear anything. But I think that was kind of like the kind of things that would actually, you'd have to say, was pressure.
Yeah, I can imagine. You had, as you said, Make It Easy on Yourself was number one. Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore went to number one. In 65 and 66, certainly in this country, you were right up there with the biggest bands. And then after that, the three of you eventually went your separate ways for a period of time, did you not? What was the process there?
Well, what happened basically was Scott really didn't want to tour. He didn't like the live work particularly, and it didn't suit him. It didn't suit his temperament. So it kind of seemed pointless to carry on making records and if you're never going to play, you know, the group wasn't going to perform. So I found that very dissatisfactory for me.
So you went away and sort of planned your own photo for a while.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I made a couple of albums and did some solo work and continued doing live shows and things. And then I went back to California for a while. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, in, I guess it was about 1974 or something, I was watching television, and we did the theme for Deadlier Than the Male. We did the theme music for that. And they were showing it on television. And I was listening to that, and I thought, well, you know, that was pretty good. And I called Scott up. It was just odd. I just picked up the phone and called him that day, and I said, what are you doing, man? And he said, well, you know, I'm hanging out here in Holland, and, you know, he wasn't really doing anything. I said, why don't we get together and think about making some more records? And he said, why not? So I flew over back to England, and Scott flew over from Holland. We found Gary, and we all got together and got together with GTO Records, and that's when we made No Regrets.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't many bands that sort of come together for a second time. Firstly, that come together in their original cast or original members, if I can put it that way. And secondly, come back with such a great hit record as No Regrets was, and return right back to top form straight away.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, but it was, I don't think we expected that either. You know, it's you don't really I don't know. I suppose I'd have to say that I never really held out great amounts of expectation for anything, except one thing that I knew for sure, that, you know, if we were going to get together and do something, whatever we were going to do, it was going to be the best we could do at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, and hopefully something that would be, you know, that people would enjoy listening to. And then along comes No Regrets, and there you have it. And when you think about it, that was a very pretty much of a long shot to start off with. The record's almost 6 minutes long.
Not an ideal sort of radio record for the time.
Well, it was good if the DJs wanted to go have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was a long record. And but still, yeah, you know, there you have it. It was successful, and there you go.
Is that an indication of the fact that I mean, to back up what you were just saying, you got back together for the fun of it, for the enjoyment of the music, and that you went out and made that record, not because it was going to be a good record commercially necessarily, although it was, or because it was going to sound good on the radio, although it did, but you made it because it was a good song and you wanted to do it?
Oh, yeah. What I mean, when I heard the record, I went, my God, listen to that.
Yeah.
You know, because the Tom Rush version was incredible, and we thought, well, now how do we go about making this ours and doing what we would do with it? And so, you know, that took some time. We sat down, figured out what we were going to do, and we went in and did it.
You made three albums back together in the 70s.
Yeah. It seems that that's all we ever did. We'd stick together for three albums and then drift again, you know. That's exactly what happened again. So, you know, after we did the Night Flights album, we just kind of, like, wandered off again.
What does the future hold for you, John? I mean, you've still got a lot of people want to come and see you in this country. You're going on I mean, it's a big tour. You know, it goes on for a couple of months. You're going all up and down the country.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you see yourself staying in music and going on touring and carrying on for a while yet?
Yeah, I do. Actually, as it happens, I'm when I finish this tour, I'm gonna be spending a little time in Germany working on a track for a film with a German group, and then I'm coming back here and I'm gonna do another few dates in where we're doing England, and then we're gonna go to Ireland for a couple of shows. And I haven't been to Ireland since 1960, probably 66.
Are you still in touch with the other guys? What became of them, Scott and Gary?
Well, Gary went on the 2004 tour, came to see me on quite a few shows, and he and I stay in touch. I haven't actually spoken to Scott for probably about, I don't know, it must be about 7 or 8 years now. He is kind of doing what he's doing. I moved to Washington State for a while. I spoke to him when I was there, but actually, it has to be about 7 years.
The three of you together and you yourself and all of you left a wonderful mark. You've left lots of music, which is, I mean, you listen back to the music you made in the 60s and the 70s. You're obviously still performing it. When you listen back to that, you still think, yeah, we really did something that was to be remembered and that people are still enjoying 4 or 5 decades later. That must be a tremendous feeling for you to know that you've made something that wasn't just popular at the time, but it's lasted.
Well, that's the incredible thing. I remember, I think it was 1993, there was a re-release of our stuff, and it actually went to number 4 in the album charts, you know, in the new album charts.
Sure.
And I thought, isn't it amazing? I mean, this music is like, when you think about it, it's over 40 years old, and people are still buying it, and they still want to hear it. So, I have to tell you that I actually feel very proud about that. I mean, that I think is a real achievement. I think we did a really good job, and we were very lucky to have had the facility to carry on making that kind of music.
Well, John, we shall look forward to seeing you. Let me remind people again, you're going to be at the Alexandra Theatre in Birmingham on the 27th of March, and at the Wolverhampton Grand on April the 22nd as part of the Solid Silver 60 show. And if people can't make either of those dates, I know you're going to be up and down the country all the way through March and April, so people have got plenty of chances to come and see you and the other folks that you mentioned earlier on the tour. So we wish you the very best of luck for that, and we'll look forward to seeing you around here in a few weeks.
Great, okay.
All the best to you, John.
You take care.
Will do.
Thanks a lot.
John Walker on BBC WM.